Spin 1038.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
Thank you to the Academy.
It is Spin 1038's movie show, We Love Movies. I'm Gordon Hayden. Rory Cashin is here to review one of the main films in cinemas this weekend. Park Chan-wook is not the name of the film, but the director who's made the likes of Old Boy and Thirst and... Yeah. Stoker was the other film he made, which is his first English language film. Yeah. Korean director, highly celebrated and acclaimed. His new film, The Handmaiden, some are saying it's his best film yet. So what's going on, Rory?
Okay. So it's 19th century Korea, and it is a rich couple, husband and daughter, maybe. It's all very blurred.
Okay.
And she hires a new handmaiden to come in to, you know, essentially someone who'll just follow her around and put nice clothes on her and put makeup on her and stuff. And it turns out this handmaiden has been sent in by a charming gentleman who wants to seduce her, marry her, and take all of her money. And this handmaiden he sent in, you know, when he's not around, the handmaiden's going to be all like, oh my God, he's so hot, you should totally marry him, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a kind of a backup, a wingman, almost.
Yeah.
But while that plot itself sounds kind of complicated, the film goes off in so many twists and turns, most of which you won't see coming, some of which you will, and you will be really happy when, you know, that shoe finally drops. It is, how I described it, was Jane Austen's Basic Instinct set in 19th century Korea.
Wow.
Right.
What a comparison to be making.
It really puts an image in your head, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued now, Roy. Again, like with a lot of foreign language films that we review in the show, would love to play you a clip, but I...
We don't have a huge Korean fan base.
Yeah, fortunately.
From what I... Well, listen, you can correct me.
You know what I mean? So I just don't think it's really going to hit home the 30 seconds that we could play. So Rory, Park Chan-wook, director who is, you know, as mentioned, you know, he's made some very, very successful films. How naughty does this film get? Because I believe there's some big sex scenes. I think there's three in particular sex scenes that sizzle.
Well, I'm trying to think now. There's definitely one that sticks out in mind. And it goes on for quite a while and it is quite explicit. But it's also, like, tasteful.
Yeah, see, this is the thing I wanted to get into because you remember there was that film that came out, was it 2 years ago in the name, what was it, something blue in the title, remember that one?
Blue is the Warmest Colour.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And it was like a 3-hour movie and it was about this lesbian love story.
Mm-hmm.
But the actresses that were involved in it, one of them in particular, was not happy with the director. She felt the manner in which the shots were filmed were very lingering. There was almost something sort of misogynistic about it.
Okay.
Whereas with Park Chan-wook's take on the lesbian tryst that happens in The Handmaiden, that it is quite tastefully done.
Like, it's tasteful to an extent. It's not... it's not explicit.
Or he's kind of a smile on his face, I should say.
I'm trying to...
You're being very good the way you're dancing around this, Rory.
Yeah, like, it is fairly... How do I put it? It does seem like a man's perspective on how a lesbian sex scene might go.
Okay.
But without it being too involved, let's say. It just, there's no massive lingering close-ups of any particular part of the body.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure some people will really enjoy the cinematography of the scene.
Don't worry, Rory. I know you backed you into a corner there and I'm going to get you out of it. The twists and turns that you did mention as well, Rory, you said like some you'll see coming and some you won't. Well done, Rory. Family show. Like, all in all, did you feel it was a satisfying conclusion, even though...
I found it a very satisfying conclusion, to be honest. It was...
If this is the last We Love Movies ever, you'll know
why. We know why.
Yeah.
No, it was... It was... It's very well told. It's got a very high IQ about it. And it's also very, very entertaining. And the performances are really, really good. If people are looking for something completely different to Fast 8 and next week's Guardians, this is absolutely it. And it is, at the moment, resting somewhere nicely in the top 10 of my year so far.
Okay.
Like, it is, and it's beautiful to look at as well. I really, really recommend it.
Excellent stuff. Nice one, Rory. So The Handmaiden is out in cinemas this weekend. Out of 10?
8.5.
That is strong,
actually. Yeah, really, really good.
Now, another film which is playing in cinemas this weekend, Rory, it didn't get screened to press, but I just want to make people aware of it. It is called The Transfiguration, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Yeah, The Transfiguration, which is this story about a young boy who just loves vampires, just crazy about vampire lore, and he meets this other outsider-type figure in this young girl who he manages to share his love of vampires with. But what seems quite innocent from her perspective, he actually kind of starts to really want to become a vampire, and he goes out of his way to try and experience what a vampire, the sort of the tastes that they would enjoy. And he starts going a little bit off the reservation in order to try and become a vampire. We'll play a little bit from the trailer just to see what horror fans would think, because it's playing in select cinemas this weekend.
Have you been hurting any animals?
Maybe thinking, but I don't do it. Not anymore.
Wow, you're really into
vampires.
I was gonna say scary movies.
So you heard, huh?
No.
Someone killed a white boy in the basement.
So what are vampires like?
I think it starts with drinking blood. Like you have a need to. Eventually that's not good enough. So you switch to animals and people.
So there is a little bit from the trailer to Transfiguration, which is out in cinemas this weekend. Rory, it seems similar to that, I was just saying to you off air, that Christopher Lloyd and Max Records horror movie.
Serial Killer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that one, which was directed by Billy O'Brien, the Irish director. Mm-hmm. Any interest in this one, The Transfiguration?
Oh, yeah, like I've noticed, like we've had a pretty much fantastic year for horror so far, because I really like Get Out, I really like Split. There was a French cannibal film that came out last week, I think, called Raw, which mm-hmm. was really, really good. Now, not everything has been great. Like, Rings and The Bye Bye Man were still things that happened this year. But this is another one where, you know, we'll fly under the radar and should deserve already the attention that people will probably give it 2 years from now when it arrives on Netflix. And you're like, have you seen this?
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
I think it's going to be one of those films. Yeah, we'll definitely have a better life when it's online. A little later on in the show, Rory will be back as we're going to be reviewing the Irish movie Handsome Devil and the really trashy thriller Unforgettable, starring Katherine Heigl. Do you remember her in Grey's Anatomy and Knocked Up? She's back, along with Rosario Dawson, in what looks like it could be one of the worst films of the year. You don't want to miss Rory's rant on that.
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
Now, We Love Movies, it is competition time. Up for grabs on DVD, we have The Hit Producer, directed by Kevin de la Isla. This is an Irish thriller. Got great acclaim when it played in cinemas. Michelle Doherty, she stars in the film as a struggling film producer in search of an investor, but she's forced to commit murder after witnessing an attempted hit in Dublin's underbelly, and then she's blackmailed into participating in a campaign to wipe out an ambitious drug boss played by Neil Fleming from Game of Thrones. So if you want to get The Hit Producer on DVD, just text The Hit Producer to Vodafone 087 711 1038.
Action! I'll be back.
You stay classy, San Diego.
And the Oscar goes to
We Love Movies
on Spin 1038.
Movie News.
Now when We Love Movies, it is time for the movie news. And very shortly, we'll be speaking to Mike Sheridan from entertainment.ie. But before we speak to Mike, I just want to play you a little bit from the trailer to The Last Jedi, which was released last week. And I gotta be honest with you, I'm a little bit torn on this one because I'm very excited to see it. I'm a massive Star Wars fan. But the trailer was okay. It was fine. There was elements to it that you thought in terms of structure was very similar to The Force Awakens. But the jury's a little bit out for me on this one. But anyway, before we speak to Mike, here's a little bit from The Last Jedi trailer.
What do you see?
Light. Darkness. A balance.
There from the trailer to The Last Jedi. Joining me now to take a look at all the movie news this week is Mike Sheridan. Mike, we're going to talk about The Last Jedi first. What did you think of the trailer, as a matter of interest?
I mean, I have to be honest, Gordo, I'm not the world's hugest Star Wars fan. And I know Brian Lloyd is somewhere in the office now just banging his head off a wall when he hears me say that, because he is. In saying that, I really enjoyed The Force Awakens. I thought Rogue One was good crack. I thought The Force Awakens was an absolute blast. So bear in mind, I'm coming at this from a place of kind of neutrality, I suppose.
Yeah.
I like Rian Johnson. I think he's a fantastic director. I think Looper is a supremely underrated film. So I'm excited to see it, you know, and the whole nostalgia value to it as well. I thought J.J. Abrams handled the last one beautifully. It's grand.
Yeah.
You know, it's fine. For somebody who's not, you know, incredibly intertwined in that world and looking for clues and kind of hyper-analyzing it, it's fine.
You're right.
I get the excitement value, but the guys in the office here were like oohing and aahing at it as soon as it dropped. But yeah, I mean, for casual fans, I think, yeah, it looks cool, effects look good, it moves properly, you know, I think that's it.
Yeah, it was grand. Like, it offered up a few little hints as to where it might go, but yeah, maybe I was expecting a little bit more. It definitely feels it's a somber piece, to the point where I thought, I don't know if it's going to be as action-led as The Force Awakens. This might be a little bit more of a thought-provoking type movie. Could maybe go down the Empire Strikes Back route in that, it'll be very much darker in tone. But look, the jury's out until we see another trailer, which will probably be a little later this year. Now, Mike, next up, I want to talk to you about this supposed feud between Vin Diesel and Dwayne Johnson. Now, for anyone that has seen Fast and Furious 8, spoiler alert, you'll know that the two boys, they don't really spend that much screen time together. So, do you know what this feud was all about? Or was it very much just a big PR publicity stunt?
I don't think so. I've interviewed The Rock 3 times. And every time I've interviewed him, he is beyond a pleasure. And they interviewed him actually for one of the Fast and Furious movies in Rio in Brazil, for the fifth one, with Paul Walker, God rest his soul, and the rest of the cast, and Tyrese, and Vin Diesel. And I got to kind of see how everybody interacted with each other, and The Rock and Paul Walker, just absolute gents, and giving everybody something different. Diesel kind of seemed like was starting to believe his own hype a little bit. So apparently The Rock said, and if you follow The Rock on social media, he's pure positivity.
Yeah.
He's pure motivation. Like, he really gets a kick out of, you know, helping people and helping people reach their goals and all that, you know. And he is, without question, the biggest movie star on earth now in terms of box office and everything else. So I think The Rock was getting a bit annoyed that Diesel wasn't turning up to set on time.
Right. And
so obviously with these big, big action movies, these big action sequences, all these departments need to be aligned. Everything needs to be, you know, really work in sync. And you can't have people sitting around set too long. It's expensive. And Diesel's a producer on this. He's a producer on this franchise. It's pretty much all he has now. And apparently he was late coming to set. And it happened often enough that The Rock, you know, kind of, you know, vocalized it on his Instagram feed, where he has like millions and millions of followers. And it just, you know, naturally enough, it grew legs from there. I mean, I don't think the publicity hurt or hindered it. I don't think people care. You know,
but sometimes that can happen, isn't it? If a couple had a bit of a romantic liaison while making the movie, people watch it and go, "Ooh, I can see the chemistry there. They're nearly sizzling there on screen." But then I'm kind of wondering if it wasn't even a case of Vin Diesel turning up to set. I'm wondering, was Vin Diesel getting a bit jealous of The Rock? Because there's been all these different stories over the years about the character of Hobbs being so good it could lead to a spin-off.
Yeah.
And then there's this other story that's emanated this week, that there was a scene that was cut from the film that had a little bit more to do with the character of Hobbs and Jason Statham's guy. I forget his name, as I remember. But the two of them were so good together in this one particular scene, and even throughout Fast and Furious 8, that it made the studio go, hang on, if we're going to do a spin-off movie, why don't we make it about these two?
Yeah.
And Vin Diesel nixed it, by all accounts.
Yeah, well, I mean, that 110% makes sense. Vin Diesel is the worst thing in the Fast and Furious franchise. Like, even in XXX, he's on a skateboard, you're 50. Relax.
Yeah.
What are you doing? nobody's buying the extreme sports thing anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Statham was hilarious in the eighth one. I mean, as a little aside, I think it's gas out of their friends now, being that he killed their mate.
I know. I was like, this is the guy who killed one. And you walked away
and called you after. That's a cold blooded stuff. I mean, I think everybody wants to be in the Rock business. I think actually Statham, I thought, was really fun in this. I thought the whole sequence he had on the plane, I don't want to give anything away, was hilarious. It was just, Statham seemed to be the one guy completely in on the joke of the whole franchise, completely in on the tone. So I'm not surprised that Universal saw that and were like, look, let's run with this.
Yeah.
I mean, Diesel will have a certain sway, but at the same time, Diesel wanted Rob Cohn to direct this film, wanted Rob Cohn to direct the first film, to direct the eighth film. And Universal were like, nah, it's not happening. Yeah. So they ended up getting F. Gary Gray, who had a huge hit with Straight Outta Compton, his last movie. So Diesel has a certain amount of sway. He doesn't have to, you know, he wouldn't have Final Cut. He doesn't have to be all and end all. He's a huge part of the franchise. But this franchise is all he has, I think. I mean, I think Triple X did okay globally. But I mean, this is his cash cow.
Pretty much, actually, you're right. Whereas The Rock is, as we know, it's just gone from strength to strength. And finally, Mike, we've seen as well over the last few years where Disney, their release schedule, it's very structured now. And one of their tentpole releases, normally in the early half of the year, will be one of their live action adaptations of one of their classic animated films. So this year, we saw Beauty and the Beast. Now, one of the films which is currently in production is Aladdin, and Guy Ritchie is the director, by all accounts, that's attached to that at the moment. But trying to find a genie to replace Robin Williams, who voiced the genie in the original animated film, is going to be a very, very tall order. But there has been a name announced this week that they looks like Disney might have found their man.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Will Smith looks like he needs a big hit. And Suicide Squad did okay, wasn't really his movie, it was an ensemble movie. Obviously, he's a big movie star. There was going to be a Bad Boys 3 directed by Joe Carnahan. He was a huge step up from Michael Bay. That was something that was, you know, you could look forward to. So Will Smith's quite, and he's very careful in terms of how he chooses his movies. It's all about box office for Will Smith, you know, for the most part. He's not somebody inclined to take risks. And that's where you see him, he's come up, he's popped up in what? And how many sequels to how many films. You know, if something's working, you know, he'll nail that to the ground and he'll keep going with it. Disney are making an absolute fortune off the live-action animated movies. Beauty and the Beast was just an absolute monster at the box office. It like breezed past a billion. John Favreau's The Jungle Book again. And I think that kind of came out of nowhere in a certain sense that they weren't expecting it to do as well as it did. So this is a no-brainer for Will Smith to take this role on because there's very little pressure on him.
Yeah.
You know, Aladdin is the franchise. Now, interesting to see what Guy Ritchie does with it. Guy Ritchie's a director, you know, with a kind of an eclectic past. And we were talking off camera there about how Lair Cake was on the other night. And we're like, I wonder what Guy Ritchie would have done with this. He gave us his producer, Matthew Vaughn. And now Matthew Vaughn's in that top tier of directors, I think. So I'll be interested to see what Guy Ritchie does with it. Mm. King Arthur looks, I'm not sure about King Arthur at all. But yeah, I mean, Robin Williams is difficult to replace. There's no question about that at all. Will Smith does have a heap of charisma, and he can be funny. So, because maybe if he reverts back to those kind of wacky Fresh Prince days, you know, the nostalgia factor could go in his favour as well.
Yeah, you're right, Mike. He needs a surefire hit, especially in a movie that looks like it's going to be a guaranteed hit at the box office as well. Mike Sheridan, thank you so much for going through this week's movie news.
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
And that is it for part one of We Love Movies. Coming up in part two, we'll be taking a look at some of the must-see blockbusters coming to cinemas in 2017. Plus, we'll be reviewing the new Irish movie, Handsome Devil, and the trashy thriller, Unforgettable, starring Katherine Heigl and Rosario Dawson. That's all to come on We Love Movies.